This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello and welcome to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Marcy Davis. And with me, as always, is my amazing co-host and service dog, Fenway. And we are delighted that you're here with us today. And I want to ask you, have you ever wondered what your horse or what any horse is actually thinking? And what the world looks and smells and sounds like through a horse's eyes? And what's really happening inside that extraordinary brain when they bond with you? When they might startle at nothing or even seem to understand exactly what you may need? Well, today we're welcoming Dr. Janet Jones, UCLA-trained cognitive neuroscientist, veteran horse trainer, and author of the just-released book, A Horse's World, A Neuroscientist's Journey into the Equine Mind, to the show. And her previous book, Horse Brain, Human Brain, has been translated into 7 languages and is in its 10th printing. So A Horse's World is already being called the first popular animal cognition book ever devoted entirely to horses. And I can tell you, it is magnificent. So come right back after these quick messages as we welcome Dr. Janet Jones to the show.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. So excited to have a conversation today with Dr. Janet Jones. Hello, Dr. Jones, and welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much, Marcy, for having me here.
Yeah, well, I am so excited for you to be here and for you to share with us some of this amazing work that you've done. And I know you've spent decades at the intersection of neuroscience and horsemanship. So I have to ask you, Janet, what first made you realize that what we knew or what we thought we knew about how horses think was fundamentally incomplete?
That came about after I had been working as a neuroscientist for a long period of time, and I was working with training horses also. And I noticed that as a trainer, people bring horses to us because they have problems. You know, there's something that the client wants to have fixed. And so I was hearing on a regular basis about misbehaviors in horses. He won't do this. He won't do that. How do I get him to do this, etc.? And as I looked at that from a neuroscientist point of view, I began to realize that a lot of these misbehaviors that people were talking about were actually just misunderstandings between a horse's brain and a human's brain, that the human had one thing in mind that was very difficult for the horse to understand because of the way the horse's brain works, which is extremely different from the way that human brains work. And so I think it was that realization that really sparked my interest in experimenting with a variety of different horses and riders to see whether I could identify more of these so-called misbehaviors that were actually misunderstandings. And it turned out that there were a lot of them. And so at that point, I felt like the best thing that I could do, you know, with my particular skill set would be to write about those and offer that information to people and hope that it would help horses be understood a little better.
That's so beautiful. And I have to share with you, Janet, that my whole life I've wanted a relationship with a horse. And I have been trying to wear my husband down, my husband of almost 40 years. And Janet, I finally wore him down. And we got our first two new little miniature horses. And it has been just the pleasure of our lives to get to know them. And I so appreciate what you're saying about the misunderstandings. And I see how easily people could interpret that. And yeah. I just love how your new book is structured around True North as he learns to navigate the human world. So I have to ask you, why did you decide to tell the science through one horse's story?
Well, that, as you know, is very unusual. Science books do not, some science books are narrative, but they do not usually focus their entire organizational framework on the story of one particular animal. And the reason that I did that is that horses are very unique. Each one is a little bit different. And I knew that if I tried to describe without a narrative what horses are like or how a particular horse might respond to a particular event, that it was going to be very difficult to provide general information about how most horses would respond to something. So that was one reason that I felt like I had to narrow it down to one horse that people, readers, could get to know and to understand a little bit. And with knowing more about his background, they would be able to have a better comprehension of why he behaved the way he did. Another big reason for using a narrative is that neuroscience tends to be dense and technical.
Yes.
And
yes.
I did not want that. My books are written for the general public. You do not have to have any kind of understanding of neuroscience at all to read this book or any of my other books. And I kind of pride myself being able to use language that explains neuroscience without dumbing it down, but at the same time that explains it so people who don't know the vocabulary can still feel really comfortable and welcome in that sphere. And so adding a story to the science with a beginning and a middle and an end was my way of trying to make this a little more interesting and entertaining for readers.
Well, it was brilliant, Janet. That was a brilliant way because I am not a neuroscientist, but I so appreciated and resonated with so many of the things that you were saying, especially with my two little guys. And I also, what you just said about how each horse is different, I totally agree with that. Their personalities are different. Their roles in the herd are different. And it was just so wonderful to get to see what that really can look like and how that's so different from us,
yes,
from humans, when I say us. So I want to ask you, tell us about how horses actually see and experience the world, their senses, their perception. I mean, I know I am surprised, and I think some of our listeners may be surprised by some of the differences between the equine sensory world and the human sensory world.
They're very, very different. So, for example, when you stand next to a horse or you are riding a horse and you're both looking out on the same scene, you do not see the same things. You're seeing two very different views of the world. A horse is a prey animal, and a prey animal has eyes set over on the sides of their head rather than in the front of their head like we do. And because of that, a horse can stand perfectly still without moving his head and without moving his body, and he can see a band of vision that extends all the way from near the back of the left hip all the way around 340 degrees circle to the back of the right hip. And that's what he sees all the time. So it's not just that he can see a 340 degree of the world. It's that he must see it. He always sees it. That's the way his eyes operate, and that's the way his brain operates. But in addition, horses have outstanding motion detection, much better than human motion detection. So their eyes and brains can pick up the tiniest, super fast movement of something in the environment. We humans could be looking straight at that moving object, and we would never know that it has even moved. So there are two big differences right there. In addition, when it comes to vision, horses have poor depth perception, and they do not see very well what is below their line of vision or above their line of vision. So that means that there are a lot of objects in the world that are down low or up high that can surprise them. For instance, down low, a dog, a cat, a child, a stump that is suddenly laying in the middle of a trail that wasn't there yesterday, or a branch that fell down. Things from above that they would not be likely to see are birds up high, the things that are on the roof of buildings, things that are set up high. I once headlined an exposition in Poland, and we had about 500 people in an indoor arena, and we had a big television monitor set up on one side of the arena, but it was set above the arena fence so that the audience would be able to see it, because they were up higher than we were. The horses went by it multiple times without ever seeing it, because it was above their line of vision, although it was in the rider's lines of vision. And all of a sudden, coming around, one of the horses shied dramatically and very, very nearly lost his rider in the dirt because he suddenly became aware of the video monitor that was positioned up above his head. So what I'm saying is that, and that's only for vision, but so these kinds of sensory differences can really have a very strong effect, not only on the horse, but on the rider and on the safety of both the horse and the rider.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, so that takes me to my next question, which based on that, based on their vision, based on them being prey animals, and based on us being predators, what does that mean for how we should approach a horse? What would you recommend, Janet?
That's a really good question, Marcy. Thank you. So approaching a horse is, of course, the very first thing that anybody has to do when they're going to interact with a horse. And in some ways, it's one of the most difficult parts. Maybe I shouldn't say difficult. It's one of the parts where we make a very important first impression on the horse. And too many humans, because we do have predator brains, and we tend to have agendas and schedules, and our minds are full of internal goals that we want to meet and achieve. So very often, humans who are first approaching a horse will march right straight up to the horse using direct eye contact and a rapid approach, a very confident, even more than confident approach. And often we tend to approach directly at the horse's face. All of these are the very worst things that a predator can do to a prey animal. These are danger signals to a horse. Direct eye contact, that's a threat. That's a warning. A horse can't give another horse direct eye contact because their eyes aren't together in front of their face. The rapid approach puts the horse in mind of a chase or an attack of some kind. So the best thing that people can do when they approach a horse or any prey animal is to remember the animal is skittish. He's worried about standing there, standing his ground while you, a predator, walk up to him. So the best way to do this is cast your eyes toward the horse's legs or shoulder, but not directly at his eyes, and usually not even at his face. Slow way down. One of my biggest pieces of training advice for all people who work with horses is slow down and approach the horse at the shoulder or the neck, but not head on to the face. And these different means of approach give a horse a much more comfortable feeling about this person who is approaching. Another thing that is very helpful is to talk to the horse. And you'll find that most horse people are chattering away. We're talking to our horses the whole time. And partly the reason for that is to comfort the horse and let them know where we are when there are times that maybe they cannot see or hear where we are. Touching the horse once we're up close enough serves that same purpose.
I love it, Janet. Well, we are going to take just a quick break and hear some important messages from our beloved sponsors. And we're going to come back. And I have something I want to tell you about what you just said about how to approach a horse. So hold that thought and we'll be right back.
Talk to the Paw.
Hi, this is Amy Schumer.
Hi, I'm Jane Lynch.
This is Mandy Moore.
Hi there, I'm Kate Walsh.
This is Catherine Tygo.
There's only one station that gives you the scoop on wagging tongues and tails and who's walking who in Rent and Tinseltown. Pet Life Radio, the tail wagger.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We are visiting today with Dr. Janet Jones about her brand new amazing book, A Horse's World. And I was just loving what you were sharing with us, Janet, before the break about how to approach a horse. And I just wanted to share with you and get your thoughts because I don't know if you know this about me, but I use a power wheelchair. And I was really worried about how the horses were going to feel about that big tank that I'm sitting in. And they could care less about it. It is so amazing how my two little mini guys are just so they're unimpressed. They're unimpacted by it at all. And that was really surprising and exciting to me that they were not afraid, because it makes a lot of noise. It does a lot of the things that you were talking about, but they just ignore it. And especially my little Romeo, because he's the one that I work with the most, and he just walks beside my wheelchair just like Fenway does, which is incredible.
Yeah, horses learn very, very quickly. They're excellent learners, and in some ways better than human learners are. And so they get used to things like that pretty quickly. I can tell you that the horse in the book, True North, would have been afraid of your wheelchair because he would never have seen anything like that. And sometimes a horse will behave in some ways differently than a mini will. And in addition to that, when a 17 one-hand horse, 1,500 pound horse, is afraid of something, everybody can see it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when a much smaller animal like a mini is afraid, it's not always quite as obvious. But nonetheless, they learn very quickly. And most horses, after, you know, 3 or 4 positive experiences with someone in a wheelchair, would have no problem about that at all. They would accept you just the same way they would accept anybody else.
Yes. And they're little stinkers, Janet. Now they want to try to drive my power wheelchair.
Oh, yes.
If I'm not doing what they want me to be doing. It's so funny. Romeo will absolutely move my control because he knows that will get my attention. Yeah. Yes.
And it probably does get your attention.
It absolutely does. Yes, it does. It does. Well, you write about equine memory and learning in your book. And I wanted to ask you, what does the science actually tell us about how well and how long horses remember people, places, experiences? I wonder about that a lot.
Horses have incredible memories. They really do. And in most types of memory, we believe that it is better than human memory. Now, we haven't completely been able to verify all of that because so far the studies that have tested memory, have equine memory, have only gone out to about 10 years, just because we haven't been doing the research for very long. As the years go by, we will continue to test those horses' memories for longer and longer times. But we do know from established scientific research that horses are capable of learning how to solve a particular type of problem and then remembering it, remembering the solution for at least 10 years. Now, this is a let me add a little bit of context here. The problem that the horses are learning to solve has absolutely nothing to do with their daily lives. They were taught it 10 years ago. They never practiced it. They were never given any further training on it. And it has no meaning to them in daily life. So that is a very unusual kind of thing to remember well. Humans in that same situation have forgotten virtually everything about a solution within 24 hours.
Wow.
So there's your difference right there, is that in that kind of task, memory loss will be almost complete within 24 hours in humans, and it will be completely 100% accurate after 10 years in horses.
That is so impressive. And I believe that just from my own little experience that I've had in just such a short time, they are incredible. The level of intelligence that my two little guys display is just awe-inspiring every day. Yep, to watch how they interact with each other and how they interact with myself and my husband. I so believe that.
It's truly.
And your book talks about brain-based horsemanship.
Yes.
Which that training that's grounded in how the horse's brain really works rather than in habit or tradition. Can you give us a little window into what that looks like in practice?
Yes. Neuroscience had really not been introduced into the equine industry for the purposes of horse training until 2020, when Horse Brain, Human Brain came out. And by then, I had been experimenting with this method of training for a long, long time. And I had seen that it works. I had applied it to a number of different kinds of things. And so to give you just a really, you know, basic example, let's go back to vision for a minute. Horses notice everything because they are prey animals, and noticing every little potential distraction helps them survive. That's how they have stayed alive for the last 56 million years. So when we ride horses, they are extremely attentive to anything that's new or distracting or not typical for the event. And one example of this, which is talked about in, I don't think it's talked about in a horse's world, but it is in Horse Brain, Human Brain, is the fact that a horse can see something up ahead and be afraid of it, and spin and bolt or buck or rear or put on the brakes all of a sudden, do all kinds of things that can endanger their riders. So there's a lot of attention paid to this in the horse training world. What can we do to prevent a horse from reacting in this way when he sees something new and different? And for centuries, the standard technique for this has been to require the horse to approach the scary object head on and walk right straight up to it. Okay, I've seen that happen a million times, and anybody who's been around horses very much will have seen that. That's still the common standard method of trying to teach a horse not to be fearful of an unusual object. The problem with this is it feels correct to the human rider because our eyes are positioned on the front of our heads, but the horse's eyes are positioned on the side of his head. And when that horse walks closer and closer to the scary object, it disappears because it is below their line of vision. And as they get closer to it, because their eyes are out on the sides of their head, it disappears because it's right in front of them. So without brain-based horsemanship, we are basically telling horses, darn it, move up there, right straight head on to this, because I'm not going to put up with this kind of bad behavior, misbehavior. Brain-based horsemanship says, wait a minute, let's change the training technique so that we can work with the horse's brain instead of against the horse's brain. And so we would then change the horse's angle so that he can see the object from the side. We would allow the horse to establish his own comfort zone to that object, and we would encourage him to go closer to it very gradually, but always on a sideways angle. And it makes a huge difference. It takes all of the fear out of the situation. It allows the horse to calm down, and it allows the horse to approach the object in a way that his brain can understand and appreciate, even if it isn't the way that our brains would understand and appreciate.
I love it, Janet. That makes total sense. And yeah, it should be a partnership where,
yes,
where we're meeting each other where we are and where we need each other to be. I love that.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that as humans, we are the ones who have the responsibility mm-hmm. to take on and to create new training techniques that fit with the horse's brain rather than just expecting the horse, well, you know, you're just going to have to meet me halfway.
Exactly. And adapt to how we see. And yes, which, yeah.
Yeah, that's just there. There's no need for that. You can train and get exactly the same excellent performance results in the long run.
Yep.
Plus less fear and more bonding and more trust.
Yes, a much deeper relationship.
By doing it that way rather than by, you know, taking the more authoritarian approach.
Yes, yes. Well, I want to switch gears just a little bit because I really want to, before you have to leave us today, I want to get some of your thoughts about equine assisted learning. That's such a growing field. And I am learning a lot about equine assisted learning and enjoying every second of it. But for our listeners, as you know, horses are being used as partners in therapeutic and educational settings and coaching sessions. Because of their capacity to respond to human emotional states. So I want to ask you, Janet, from a neuroscience perspective, what do you think is actually happening when a horse and a person connect in that way?
There's a whole chapter on that in A Horse's World.
Yes, there is.
I'll try to give you a brief answer to that question.
Thank you.
There are a number of things about horses' brains that make them excellent therapy animals. And one of the primary things is the fact that horses are not known to have any kind of executive function. By that, I mean they don't make very complicated decisions. They don't plan and strategize a sequence of steps to meet a goal in advance. They're not that kind of animal. They live very much in the here and now. And that's one of the great things about them. And that is something I think that really helps with therapy, that the very best human therapist can't help but come across every now and then as a little bit judgmental or maybe observational to the point that they sound critical, like, gee, you didn't have to do it that way. You could have done it this way. And all of that fits with learning. That's fine. But you see, the horse can do that with absolutely no judgment, no criticism, nothing critical whatsoever. The horse simply accepts you for who you are right at that moment. And she responds to you for who you are at that moment, not for who you were or who you will be in the future. So I think that executive function is one important aspect of equine-assisted therapy. And then another one, and I'll just mention two out of the dozen or so that we know about. Another one is that horses, because they are prey animals, are experts at teaching people how to manage fear. They have to manage fear in their daily lives all the time. And when a horse gets scared, he's a great big average 1,200-pound animal. His fear is extremely obvious. Nobody's going to miss it. And then the trainer takes very specific steps over a long period of time to teach the horse how to manage her fear. And I think that that is a process that people can watch when they're just learning maybe to trust other human beings or to get accustomed to feeling comfortable with conversations with other people, all of that kind of thing, that horses can basically become role models for people who have been abused or traumatized and no longer trust humans. But they will watch a horse and they will see how long and how difficult it is for that horse to overcome fear and learn to manage it. And just that lesson is extremely important to them.
Oh, yes, yes. And it's so genuine and so pure. The horse doesn't have those biases, like you were describing that a person might have as a therapist.
Right.
I just think that just totally nails it. Yeah. Well, Janet, the book is fabulous. Thank you so much for what you've done, for your work, and that you are helping all of us to have a better glimpse into the incredible, incredible world of horses. And I know I am so in love with my two little horses, and I'm so thankful that I'm getting to build a relationship. So thank you for this wonderful work that you've done. And before you leave us, tell us where people can find the book, where can they follow your work, and learn about some of the things that you do, your master classes in brain-based horsemanship. Where can they get all that great information?
All of that kind of information is available on my website, which is janet-jones.com. And then the books are sold from the website. But in addition to that, they're available for sale at all online booksellers and physical bookstores. And they are available in, A Horse's World is available in hardcover, electronic, and audio formats.
Excellent.
And so just come to the website, and from there it will be easy to go on and find out however much more you would like to.
Perfect. Well, we will make sure and include that on our website and on your show where people can find you. That sounds wonderful, Janet. Thank you so much for being with us today. And we hope you'll come back and visit with us more, because I had a lot more questions that I would have loved to have asked. And we are just so excited about this wonderful cutting edge work and the amazing, amazing gifts that horses are to all of us. So thank you so much, Janet.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and good luck with your minis. That'll be fun.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, our listeners, for being with us. We're so glad you would join us today. And we love to hear from you. You know that Fenway and I love your emails and your thoughts about guests that you would like for us to have on the show. So please keep those coming. And you know that you can reach me at Marcie, M-A-R-C-I-E, at PetLifeRadio.com. Thanks so much for being with us, and take good care.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.